All right, just something we mentioned a bit earlier today is the relationship of the books of the Word as defined in the writings in the New Testament, and the relationship of them in terms of the progression of, in terms of spiritual growth development. So we have, the first one is
Matthew.
And the next one?
Yes.
And the next one?
John.
And what's the other book?
Revelation.
In terms of New Testament. Okay, so we just had a conversation with Joe this morning, and thought it'd be a good idea just to point some things out with regard to the order, really, why they fall in this particular order, or my view of why they fall in this particular order. So this is not something you'll find in the writings. It's just something that has helped me, and perhaps will help you as well. What I would like you to do, though, is maybe we can follow up. Just if you just open a Bible, if you have a Bible, to first chapter of Matthew. You'll see Matthew begins with a genealogy and the birth of the Lord, and if you just move through to, well, I know in my Bible there are lots and lots of little stars that have been put in it, actually, which refer to references that lead back into the Old Testament. Okay, so yeah, we won't go through it all, but, you know, there are a lot of quotes from the prophets in the book of Matthew and from the stories of the Old Testament. So it is heavily weighted, more so than any of the other Gospels. It has Old Testament material all the way through it. Okay, so that's something just to be aware of, and it's something that I want to emphasise here. So in terms of the progression here with Matthew, we have a looking back. In order to understand what's happening now. So in that sense, it's a state, in general terms, it's a state that is looking back to established knowledge and understanding, and trying to use that in order to understand the life of the Lord. Okay, but it's established knowledge and tradition is what Matthew's gospel is built up around. Now, someone just opens up Mark, the first chapter of Mark, and just read out the first few verses of Mark.
The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, as it is written in the prophets, "Behold, I send my messenger before your face, who will prepare your way before you, the voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make his path straight."
Yeah, so that's a connection back into a quote from, that quote leads us also back into the Old Testament, to the book of Isaiah. In terms of Jesus here, Jesus is an infant. Okay, begins as an infant with Mark's gospel.
An adult.
He's an adult. Yeah, fully mature adult. And Mark's gospel is actually the shortest of the gospels, and its style is actually say. Action. Yeah. It's style is, it's just things happening one after the other. And even in the language, in the Greek, it actually gives that feeling of, you know, it's an action gospel. It's things that are happening. Things are actually outworking themselves. So whereas Matthew is looking back, Mark is more doing or action.
It's breathless.
It is, yeah. When you read it, you get that feel. It's just an incredible feel of movement.
Julian and I went to see a man recite the Gospel of Mark, and he was on the stage and he had a couple of chairs or something, and he acted out and said the whole Gospel. Mm. And it really was one thing after another.
Yeah, I had it put down. I think I remember rereading that Gospel of Mark, and over and over I could sit down and just each time I read it from start to finish.
Yeah.
Very, very, very.
Yeah, that was next Gospel.
What's that?
A story gets you in when you want to keep knowing what happens next.
It's great for that. And then we come to Luke. So if someone just reads the opening verses of Luke's Gospel.
Inasmuch as many have taken in hand to set in order a narrative of those things which have been fulfilled among us, just as those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word delivered them to us.
Just keep going.
Okay, yeah. It seemed good to me also, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, to write to you on orderly account, most excellent Theophilus, that you may know the certainty of those things in which you were instructed.
Okay, that's fine. Cool, thanks for that. So what you have is Luke's Gospel is written to Theophilus, which means friend of God. And just paraphrased, what he's saying there is, look, you've heard it before, it's been laid down before, but now I'm going to tell you it again. It's a retelling of the story. So that's what Luke is, a retelling.
I just, what's jumped out of the page there at me this time around, which hadn't before, is having had a perfect understanding of all things from the very first. So there's a flowing down. There's an influx there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So from first principles.
True.
So there's the context there. You know? A sense of a source of something.
Yeah.
It
certainly relates to the themes over the whole 3 days in terms of the whole idea of influx and order and perfection and all of that.
So it's like, Mark, you're in the moment of what's happening, whereas with Luke it's a stepping back and it's telling it in terms of the context and the sequence. Mm. And
it's assuming you've already heard the story, but it's filling in gaps maybe more.
Has a very different feel, Luke, to Matthew. Like, it's similar, you know, Luke has a genealogy, it doesn't occur at the start, but if you just move on a little bit, I think it's the next chapter. Chapter 3. You hit a genealogy. Now, there is differences in that genealogy, which is interesting in itself. But it speaks that all genealogies are outbirths of state. So it's certainly a different state, and it certainly has a different feel. And what's the way of illustrating that? What's the main illustration that we can give concerning the difference between the feel of Matthew and Mark? Matthew and Luke.
But Luke's a lot more on feelings because all the women are in Luke, all the women's stories.
Yep. What else? What about around the Lord's birth and early years?
A very nice Christmas story,
isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, not the horrible Christmas story.
That's right. So in Matthew's Gospel, you have Herod.
Yeah.
And the murder of the children, the infants. In Luke's Gospel, it's shepherds and
angels
and it's soft, right? It's soft. So
it's called a New Age birth.
So, you know, like for me, it has a very celestial feel to it.
Metrosexual.
This has a much more harder spiritual kind of battle, battle, struggle kind of feel about it. So so that's interesting in itself. And if someone could just read the opening few verses of John's Gospel.
Classic Christmas reading.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it.
You know, John is just so different from the other Gospels. Incredibly so. And John is all about the Word. And it's all about that the Word is the Lord. So, in terms of progression, there is a progression here. And it relates to our own regeneration on many different levels. But Matthew is the knowledge that we possess up to a point in the change of state. Okay, so Matthew is knowledge that we have, if you like, about spiritual things that has yet to be worked into our life. That's sort of what Matthew presents. It looks back, it's drawing on tradition, all of that. And so you get this sense of a lower level of knowledge about the Word. Okay?
It's an alpha course, isn't it? It's an introductory sort of, you know, teaching.
Yeah. Has to do with that. Now, to me, what it appears to be is that for knowledge, in order for knowledge to become part of the life, it has to be put into practice. And it's interesting in that respect because Mark is a gospel about doing. It's about practice, you know, it's about action. And so it would seem to be that Mark is taking hold of what was before and is now about living from what was before. All right, and of course, when you begin to actually practice the knowledge you've learnt, so if you're an apprentice and you've gone to TAFE and you've got all your information, when you begin to practice it, then what happens?
Because automation.
You learn lots more things.
You do. You start to learn the practical knowledge. Or that knowledge that can only come out of
doing. You think you know it
all,
so you start doing it.
Yeah, and so there has to be a retelling of how it actually is. So Mark is operating, so if you think of it in these terms, which is fits in well with our talk, particularly David's talk on the tabernacle, truth leading to good. Good. I've done that a bit. Truth. Practice. Leading to a, which is good, but leading to a new understanding. Of truth. Which has a practical import. So, what you have, and so like you can see that what we have here are terms. You know, when you read the writings, you have good from truth. Okay? Good from truth, that is obedience. I understand, I've got to do this. I don't fully understand what it's all about, but I do it anyway. And then as you do it, you receive an understanding of truth that comes forth from good, which is a much more usable form of the truth. So this truth has good as its base. This good, in the sense, has truth as its base. Okay. Now, in all of these Gospels, the focus is on very much centered on God as person. it's bottom up kind of stuff. It's thinking about Jesus the man, which is at the centre of the thought, and arriving at an understanding of God from that. But as we spoke about yesterday, when we move from an understanding of person, as we understand a natural human person, and start attributing those attributes to our understanding of God, then we close things down. Now, in true Christian religion, it talks about not understanding God from person to essence, but understanding God from essence to person. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Well, when you focus on person, the historical person Jesus, and think about the divine from that, you attribute elements of space and time to the divine. But if you think from essence, the Lord is divine love and wisdom, to person, then what that means is that everything at the person level you understand is representative of the divine and not the divine as it is in itself. And that's quite important. And the way, so it's abstracted from person. So Jesus, the historical figure of Jesus and the story centered around the Lord Jesus Christ as a historical figure becomes a representation of inner realities as opposed to being the reality itself. Okay. Now, when you abstract from person thinking about God, then we see that the Lord is in fact the Word. And I'll just give you a quick example. If you think of God as a person in the sense of, and your point of reference is the person Jesus Christ of history, then you will think about the Lord somewhere. And you will think about the Word as here. And so you separate them. But if you think top down, then what happens in this revelation here that John presents, John's Gospel presents, you see that divine love and wisdom at the most ultimate level of existence presents itself in human language, conveys the knowledge of truth, wisdom, through human language. And you would expect that language would be the thing that is used to convey knowledge about spiritual and celestial realities.
That's sort of in the opening verse of John's Gospel, everything you've just said. Mm. In the beginning was the Word, language.
Yeah.
It's more than that.
Yeah.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
Yeah.
Or the Word was with the Lord, and the Word is the Lord.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is that in our translations, they've reversed Word and God. In the Greek,
The Word. God is the Word.
So you see that there is a progression of revelation occurring, and that progression reflects our own journey into coming to see that the Lord is the Word. Now, when that is seen, there is a major adjustment that has to take place in our ideas and relationship to the Word. Okay? It means that the Lord is very physically present with us right now. It means that. It means that the ideas that we bring, the historical space-time ideas that we sort of bring to our understanding of spiritual matters, has to be put off. in order that we can have a much richer and fuller understanding. And what I believe that is what is described in the writings as the Lord's glorification. I stand here ready to be stoned, maybe, but the idea here is that the Lord is unchanging. So we know that. He's unchanging. You know, it's not that the Lord doesn't progress or his form of life doesn't change. But certainly in the historical figure of Jesus, we see finite limitation placed upon the divine, if you like. That's the general kind of stark image you're given, right? But the Lord doesn't need to glorify himself. The Lord is the fullness of glory. Always. It's never been any different. But the appearance, as far as our level of life is concerned, is that there is a progression, because there is actually a progression. But what the historical figure of Jesus represents, or what is played out on the stage of physical material life, is the story that has always been contained in every word that the Lord has delivered to mankind. But humankind had got to the point where it had to actually be physically represented on the stage of history. That story had to be physically represented. And so what you get then is that you get a person, the Lord, manifesting as a person in the world, dealing with scribes and Pharisees and bigotry and self-righteousness and all of that kind of stuff, which is exactly the same thing that happens as we work with the Word. When we first take the Word into our life, we bring our own stuff to it. We understand it, how it suits us. And so the Lord gets clothed with a limited and infirm humanity. The humanity of our own ideas about what it all means. And what the Word has to do, once it's in there, it has to put that off. Now those ideas, and we pick them up from the church and our reading of theology and on spiritual matters, that is the maternal human that is put on top of the Word. And as that Word is allowed to work, as that divine truth is allowed to work in our life through our willingness to be obedient to it, so those false ideas concerning the divine slowly get put off. And that describes the Lord's glorification. So the idea there is that the common presentation is that there are these levels in the Word, and you have the celestial sense, which you mentioned here, and the spiritual sense. That which has to do with the Lord's glorification, and that has to do with the Lord's our regeneration. So you have these levels, and they're described in the main through collateral literature and things as running in parallel. Running in parallel. In terms of the actual inner experience of the same thing applied not to the Lord as a person in the world, but to the operation of the Word or the divine truth within the human mind, what happens is that as we regenerate, so we see that the Word is divine. And so the regeneration, and I like to think of it as the double helix sort of idea rather than a parallel lines kind of idea, as we regenerate, we actually come to see what the Word really is. And it's that, and that is what is described as the Lord's glorification. So regeneration and glorification are related to each other.
It's a beautiful picture, David.
It'd be nice to have a 3D moving
tabernacle experience.
Animated cartoon.
Yeah.
Now, what's Revelation about? These are the books of the Word in the New Testament. what is revelation about? So what's happened here, there's a realization of something profound.
Promise, vision and promise.
What's going on in Revelation, though?
It's an opening up.
There are two things are going on in Revelation. One is thermonuclear. Okay.
Implosion.
That's right. Outbursts and openings of files and bowls and plagues and so on, interspersed with things like silence and the souls under the altar, and the messages to the seven churches, and the promise of things, this too shall pass. But it's 2-1 or 3-1. 3-1, the 3 is the thermonuclear, and the 1 in ratio is the witness.
Yep, lovely. The Book of Revelation, when you look at it, like it's the sorting out. It's everything. Like what's happened is that we have here are going up to a revelation. Okay, this revelation here. And then we have an outworking and a descent occurring here.
Manifestation.
Yeah, this is what happens, is that when this is realized and we truly realized, then you cannot ignore the sacred scriptures. You are confronted with something. And you're confronted really with the need to practice, to live from them, to be seriously connected in with them. And when that begins to happen, stuff starts getting sorted out. Okay? So the Book of Revelation is that body of knowledge being reformed in a way that the things that need to be put to bed in terms of our regeneration can finally actually be put down. And what needs to be elevated in our life can actually be elevated. Okay?
That's the real doing it as opposed to the mark doing it.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's the doing it that comes from this realization. Now this is the human form. And that is why the Word is the Lord's divine human.
Explain how that's the human form.
It's the human form that describes our process. It's the human form in terms of process.
Internal form.
Yeah. Not shape, but process. You can actually do this with the whole of the Word from Genesis right through. The same story is told, and including this here. But this is a realization, actually, at this point, of God as person, God as human. That's what's happened at the start of the New Testament here. And then and then the meaning of that is worked out, and the expansion of the idea. So the Lord's human is how the Lord, so as opposed to the Lord or the divine as he is in himself, which is what we talked about yesterday, this is about the Lord and his divine human. The Lord as he can be comprehended within finite comprehension. And the more perfect that presentation is, in terms of our reception of it, the more human we are. Because what is it to be human? Well, the writings tell us it is love, wisdom, and use. That is the human form. That is the human form. Love, wisdom, and use.
So, I was just trying to think about the doing in Mark and the doing in Revelation. The doing in Mark is the you doing it, which is good because you're trying to put into practice the truths. But the final revelation is the doing through you of the being of use.
Yeah.
as opposed to applying the truths.
Yeah, this kind of doing, the doing that flows out of here, is is a stark realization that it's really the Lord that does. That's not quite seen here.
Right.
Yeah. I can see that Matthew, Mark, Luke, John very much in my life. Like Matthew is your childhood, teenage, while you're taking all the information in. And Mark, the adult, the doings, when you're like busy with your family and just getting on with life, you don't have time to think. And then you start thinking, that's Luke. And,
the first is
one. I saw the Lukey John.
Yes.
You're ahead of your time. Yeah.
The first is a doing from the head, and the second is a doing from the heart.
Yeah, so that's right. Yeah. So this is a doing out of obedience, pretty much.
Yes. That's right. Reformation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to regeneration,
which comes from
here. Wow, that's great.
Can I add one thing, and that is the appearance of that wonderful diagram that you've put up appears in my finite self to suggest linear. And I think it's important to appreciate and to delinearize this, because everything, Matthew still is eternally relevant.
Yep.
The angels are in contact and use with the whole of the word. It's not a goal setting.
No.
Good.
Only.
Yeah.
It's with each truth that you work.
That's right. Every state goes through this process.
Yeah.
So the process plays out, so you have that idea of a holographic.
Yeah, so some you're in Matt's and some you're in Mark's.
It's spiral. You revisit every time and get closer and closer to the completeness.
Yeah.
The revelation's come down to earth. Hasn't it?
Yeah, it's the outwork, it's the descent.
Comes down to earth, and when we went down there for a while, we seem to find ourselves back at Matthew.
It's called snakes and ladders.
So that's when we can really help other people, when you've got something that you really, really is part of your life, then that's what affects other people.
That's right.
And that's when you can do the real work, is helping other people.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I think they found recent studies where children brought up with their grandparents seem to have a lot more opportunities in life than those without.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see that you have this later part of life, which is represented in your Lukes and your Johns, and can relate back to infants that are in this earlier stage in the Matthews.
Yeah. So you think of, when you come to, you come to read the Arcana in the books of Genesis, and particularly you get to the story of Abraham, chapter 12, and it's talking about the Lord as an infant. You know, think of it in terms of the infancy of truth within you. That's the way to think about that, and it starts to open it up in a very different way. And brings it much closer to where we are. The thing I was going to say, like when you have a finite attribution to the divine, what I've found with people where this is very strong is that when they get into difficulties, they're looking to the magical. They're looking for their idea of Jesus to come and do something about their situation. When you move more into this, it becomes much more about engaging with the scriptures, with the doctrines, in order to build the resources that are needed for the Lord to outwork things.
It's an active ownership as opposed to passive pleading.
That's right.
An example in Cor brought it up this morning is crucifixion. Okay. Person-based crucifixion is to attribute some magical, I say that with great respect, some magical property to the figure of Christ in dying on the cross and so on. So we look to his crucifixion. But when the word is the Lord, crucifixion then becomes a dying away or loss of some part of our life which has been crucified, and what all that that means, but is now different because it has, you know, ego or whatever it is has actually been put to death. Okay, in that sense, so it's a internal crucifixion. And I think that's a powerful illustration of that.
Just in terms of the human form, as far as the whole of the word is concerned, found in the Bible, when you think about it, first five books of Moses is about information, just in very general terms. Joshua is about application. Then you come through the Judges, which is still about application and certain things getting sorted out. Then you have the establishment through the kings. Of a more formal structure of things. Psalms is like midlife crisis. It's like, what's going on? And actually, where it even falls in that progression, yeah. And then you have the prophets, and the prophets is really about self-examination and sorting out what's arising. It's all about various sins and things that are having to be brought to the surface. And then you move into the gospel stories of the Lord as person, something you can connect to, feel close to, someone who walks with me, all of that kind of thing. And so, like, in terms like, so even when you include the Old Testament here, you have the human form. You have the progression of your own spiritual life is mapped out. So it's just a case of thinking of human form in a much wider way than what we are most inclined to.
I can see the progression of Christian churches too. From my experience in various different denominations, I see a lot of the ones I experienced in my earlier life as Matthew and Mark, and I see the Swedenborgian-based churches as the Luke, John to Revelation, which is why I often hear people being worried about the number of people that come to a new church. But I see, because of where it is, it's not going to attract a lot of people because the numbers are pyramidal, they fall off because a lot of people can't get past the Matthew Mark stages. They need the crutches of the Anglican or the Roman Catholic Church to keep them going. Whereas once you get to the other side, you're on your own. And a lot of people can't handle that. So I see the progression through Christian churches.
We hear the discussion first. I don't think you were. No, we're talking about numbers and churches.
Yes, I believe so. And so
thumbs up.
Yes.
I don't think you should worry about it.
No. Well, somebody after the service this morning, which was obviously relatively lighter, but it was, enough, somebody said, the smaller the group, the better it is. Less is more. Strange. Of course you want everybody to have it.
No, of course changed.
But yeah, nicely put. I think that's in terms of relating it to that model.
Okay.
Thanks for that. That's what I mean.
That really brings us formally to the end of the seminar. But I just want to read the psalm that I read the other morning again, just to...
Can I just say, I think we all ought to have a Bible with the overlaid in gold like yours, because it's like the ark, covered in gold, and I was thinking we should all have a Bible like that, with gold leaf on.
I was at the Victorian seminar, and I had a few Bibles, but I had the one that I usually carry around with me, and it is what they call an ultra thin Bible, ultra small print. And I discovered that I was having real trouble actually reading it. So I grabbed Chris Skinner had a spare, And it was like very similar to this one, and it was just so much more relaxed reading. You know, text
is about
four or five times as high. So it was all about the tabernacle over this period, and the next seminar will probably be about the tabernacle as well. But Psalm 84 is a beautiful psalm. So just centre yourself and just enter into the spirit of what's here. How lovely is your tabernacle, O Lord of hosts. My soul longs, yes, even faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young. Even your altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God, blessed are those who dwell in your house. They will still be praising you. Blessed is the man whose strength is in you, whose heart is set on pilgrimage. As they pass through the valley of Baca, they make it a spring. The rain also covers it with pools. They go from strength to strength. Each one appears before God in Zion. O Lord God of hosts, hear my prayer. Give ear, O God of Jacob. O God, behold our shield, and look upon the face of your anointing. For a day in your courts is better than a thousand. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord will give grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from those who walk uprightly. O Lord of hosts, blessed is the man who trusts in you. Amen.